Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Thursday, July 7th. Well, everybody's talking about the big news out of Europe this morning, but maybe they're focusing on the wrong story. Yes, we know Boris Johnson is resigning, but ho-hum on one level, right? Politicians make their entrances and politicians make their Brexits. Much bigger than that, though, with much longer-term consequences. The European Parliament yesterday voted to declare nuclear power and natural gas to be sources of green energy. Have you heard that? We mentioned it on yesterday's show. Nuclear energy, you probably know, does not produce greenhouse gas emissions, but has other environmental issues. But maybe you're hearing this and saying to yourself, wait, what? Gas is a fossil fuel, isn't it? Didn't New York City Council just pass a law to ban new natural gas hookups and make all new buildings go all electric in the name of the environment, of the climate? Yes, they did. But wait, isn't Europe the place in the industrialized world that's actually leading the way in seriousness about reducing its carbon emissions? Well, yes, it is. So what exactly is going on here? Is Europe gaslighting us about gas? And so we lead today with our climate story of the week. Is Europe gaslighting us about gas? Or as a New York Times headline straightforwardly asks the question, is gas green? Joining us now to try to answer that question is the author of the article, Somini Sengupta, the international climate reporter for The Times and lead writer for the New York Times Climate Forward newsletter. Hi, Somini. Welcome back to WNYC. And thanks for doing another turn on our climate story of the week.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Let's actually start with the political context, and then we'll do some science. Now, this has something to do with the war in Ukraine and Europe's desire to end its dependency on Russia for energy as quickly as possible, right?
Sort of. It has something to do with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, because Europe gets 40% of its energy from Russia. That's a lot for its electricity and for heating homes. So it's hugely dependent on Russia. And Vladimir Putin has been able to sort of turn that tap up and down. So there's a huge concern about, well, where is Europe's energy going to come from if it actually weans itself off from Russian gas or if it gets cut off from Russian gas? But here's the thing. The Russian invasion presented the countries of Europe, 27 countries in this bloc, with a really important choice. Do they use this as a moment to get gas from anywhere else other than Russia and prolong their reliance on gas? Or do they use this as a moment to really double down on renewable energy, wind and solar and so on? And that has been really the crucial political choice for lawmakers in Europe over the last several months. And with this vote yesterday, they chose gas very clearly.
So staying on the politics, what does declaring gas to be green change? Because the headline isn't that the science has changed. The headline is the European Parliament took a political action, which is what parliaments do, to classify natural gas as a green energy source. So what changes for whom as a result of that?
Right. So the European Union Parliament, voted to label some gas and nuclear energy projects as green. That makes them eligible for cheap loans and even some government subsidies. And so it has real world implications. It reflects three things. It reflects the power of the gas and nuclear industry and the two big European Union countries, France, which has a lot of nuclear, and Germany, which really relies on gas. So it reflects the power of both industry, those two industries, and the two countries that promote these two sources of energy. Two, it signals, as we were discussing earlier, that European lawmakers really made a choice that they're going to rely on gas for the foreseeable future. And remember, if you build a gas project now, that takes a while to, for gas to start flowing or for liquid forms of gas to start coming into those terminals. And it kind of means that those production facilities or those facilities will remain for the next like 30, 40 years. So it's not something, new gas projects is not something that you can turn on just you know, tomorrow. So, and the third implication of this vote is that it really makes it pretty hard for the industrialized countries of the global north to tell other countries that aren't big historic polluters like Europe and the US, makes it very hard to say to other countries, no, don't develop the fossil fuels that you have, that right. you want for your own industrial development. So it really does have reverberations for global climate negotiations.
And I want to come back to that later in the conversation, whether it is a zero-sum game like that and a competition between industrialized countries, which have been polluting for decades, and those that have a strong need to develop their economies. Should history's big polluters like Europe get to use gas at all as a transitional fuel, or should that right be reserved for developing countries? So listeners, bookmark that question in your mind and we'll circle back to it. But first, let's do some of the science. When we say natural gas, what are we really talking about? And what does the word natural refer to? I mean, they put the word natural on my peanut butter to signal that it's healthy in some way and comes from certain ingredients and not others. What makes natural gas natural?
Well, that's a really good question that we try to answer in the Climate Forward column. All petroleum products come from nature. All fossil fuels are natural. We don't call coal natural, though it does come from, you know, nature. So you'll notice that I don't use the term natural gas. It would be more accurate to call gas, the thing we're talking about, to call it methane gas, or some people refer to it as fossil gas. Why methane? Because that's its principal component. And methane is a very potent and fast-acting planet-warming gas. So it's pretty widely acknowledged that cutting methane would have really fast effects on global temperature rise. And in fact, the European Union, along with the United States, led efforts to say, hey, world, we're going to reduce methane emissions by 30% by 2030. That was a big announcement. It was called the Global Methane Pledge, big announcement last November in Glasgow in the International Climate Talks. And so, you know, this is a bit bewildering that the European Union is now signaling that, in fact, it intends to prolong its reliance on methane gas. The other problem with gas is that it leaks, whether intentionally or accidentally. It's impossible to see with the naked eye, but we've done stories and European scientists have done research using satellite data showing where these giant methane leaks occur in the world. And they're so big that they can actually be seen from space.
But you're right that natural gas produces lower carbon emissions than coal, but much more than wind or solar. The leaks aside, or maybe including the methane leaks, is it possible to say where gas falls on that spectrum between, let's say, coal and wind or oil and solar, and why it's in this gray area that some people call green and some people don't?
I don't think it's in a gray area. It is very clearly a fossil fuel. There's no doubt about that. But if you have an old coal-fired power plant, that is the most polluting. If you have a relatively new coal-fired power plant, that is still polluting because coal is the dirtiest fossil fuel, but you might have some scrubbers in there to temper the pollution a little bit. Gas produces emissions. As I said, it produces methane emissions, which are very potent and very fast acting. In another category altogether are wind, solar, hydropower, geothermal, and nuclear, which, as you pointed out earlier in your introduction, doesn't have greenhouse gases, gas emissions associated with it, but plenty of other environmental risks, and it remains really controversial in some European countries, but not others.
I asked you before about the word natural and natural gas, which I guess turns out to be just a marketing tool. What about the word fossil in fossil fuels? You say fossil gas is a more accurate term. I think when most people think of fossils, they think of old dinosaur bones that are sitting in the Museum of Natural History or something. So what does it have to do with energy sources?
Right. I mean, they are, very old compounds, that have been sealed underground, and we are extracting them, humans, and burning them. And we've known for a very long time, there's no debate, this is settled science, that the combustion of fossil fuel produces planet warming gases.
This has another implication, it seems to me. If a new gas infrastructure is being built up quickly, I assume there will be resistance from producers to taking it down, even when Russia is out of the way. So are the cheaper loans and subsidies that are now being made available for natural gas by declaring it green temporary? Do they phase out in some way after a while to give more advantage to true renewables when that is seen as economically realistic?
Yeah, that's unclear. When we interviewed the European vice president in charge of the green transition, Frans Timmermans, a few weeks ago, he said, well, the contracts we are entering into with gas producers, we're trying to limit it for 10 to 15 years. But, these are negotiations, right? And so gas suppliers are going to want longer term contracts. So that's going to be difficult. And those who build and fund new gas infrastructure will most certainly want to make their money back. It should be noted that the United States, which is the world's largest gas producer at the moment, the United States has really been trying to help the European Union get off of Russian gas. It's got limited ability to do that. President Biden has asked American gas producers to maximize the output of liquefied gas. This is like a form of gas that you can put in a ship and it goes across the ocean. But Europe doesn't have import terminals that can take in that much gas in all different parts of Europe. Some parts do, other parts don't. So there's an issue there.
Listeners, we'll go to your calls in just a minute with Somini Sengupta from The Times on our climate story of the week about the European Parliament yesterday voting to declare nuclear power and gas to be sources of green energy, eligible for subsidies and cheaper loans. Rehan in Manhattan, we see you. Steve in West Caldwell, we see you. But are there implications for the United States? The U.S. has become an energy exporter, right? The old notion of the U.S. dependent on the Middle East is breaking down over time. This is, in fact, a local debate in New York State right now. We have a governor's race on, right, where there's a ban on fracking for gas in New York State that Andrew Cuomo imposed a number of years ago. The Republican candidate, Lee Zeldin, is running on restoring fracking for natural gas to New York State. The incumbent Democrat, Kathy Hochul, wants to keep the ban. So this is a local issue, even at the level of New York State. But what about larger implications for what Europe is doing here for the U.S., either setting a precedent that puts pressure on this country to be more lenient on gas to view it as green, or anything else?
Yeah, I mean, there is a EU-US energy partnership that was announced several weeks ago. In it, the United States, says it will try to help Europe meet its demand for non-Russian gas. It promises a fairly significant amount of gas for Europe. But as I said, it still needs countries in Europe to build the kind of infrastructure that they need to receive European to receive American gas. And there's still expansion of American gas export terminals, primarily in the Permian Basin. Beyond United States gas, there are other countries that produce gas: Australia, Qatar, and most interestingly, there's a lot of gas reserves, a lot of gas potential in several countries in Africa. Angola, Senegal, Nigeria, and European lawmakers, European leaders have gone down to those countries trying to ink deals for those African gas producers to help Europe meet its gas needs. So, look out for, in the coming months, debate about whether those African countries should develop the gas that they have in their under their land and in their seas, and whether that gas should be used for their own economic development and industrial growth, or whether it should be exported to Europe for a good price. This is all very interesting and sort of kind of set off by the Russian invasion of Europe, but really it's clear to me whether the Russian invasion is the reason, that the world as a whole is not reducing its dependence on fossil fuels, or is it being used as an excuse not to reduce dependence on fossil fuels? That is debatable.
Steve in West Caldwell, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to touch on the issue that you brought up initially about why it's called natural gas. And my understanding is that natural gas comes right out of the well. And the other type of gas that was used for many, many years was manufactured gas, which is manufactured from coal. And the utility companies burned coal in retorts and recovered the gas and then piped it into homes. And that was a popular way to light and cook from the mid-1800s until about the 1960s. I think it was early 60s, 62, when a pipeline was installed directly from Texas to the Northeast area, so that manufactured gas was no longer needed. And the issue is that the manufacturing process created a lot of nasty residual chemicals that are the source of groundwater and soil contamination. And the utility companies have been dealing with that over the last 25 years with expensive cleanups. But I believe that that's why they call it natural gas, because it's not manufactured gas.
Thank you for that history. Very interesting. Even though it still is a fossil fuel, and natural has certain connotations of cleanliness and sustainability. Yeah, the difference, if that's the difference between natural and manufactured, and that's why the word natural got used in the first place. That's really interesting. So Samina is
when I'm not familiar with that history. I can only say that I think names matter. And there are several possible names for gas. I think methane gas is the most accurate because that's its principal component. But you can also call it fossil gas. I do think that for all the reasons you've said, calling it natural gas has certain connotations. And so I don't think that's accidental.
What's the relationship between methane gas and gasoline? Any?
Well, gasoline that we put into our cars, that's
a whole other topic.
That's a whole other thing. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it comes from the same place, and at many times it comes from the same countries. So the U.S. is a major oil and gas producer, as is Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
We just have a minute left. You know, I mentioned in the intro that New York City law recently passed that will ban new gas hookups in newly constructed buildings. So no more gas heat, no more gas ovens, all electric in new construction. Is Europe doing anything like that?
Well, I don't know city by city or state by state, but I have to say, I mean, anecdotally, European homes, it's not uncommon to see new convection electric, new electric stoves and ovens. In some places, electric heat pumps are pretty common. In other places, they're not. The Netherlands recently announced a big push to install heat pumps in some very large number of buildings. I think the bigger challenge, honestly, is not in new hookups. The bigger challenge is how to get gas out of existing buildings. So, all of our large housing stock in New York City, all the apartments, it's not impossible, but it is, complicated to switch out gas boilers and install electric heat pumps. That is being done by several companies. And there are some cities around the United States that have committed to making all of its buildings, new and old, all electric to get fossil fuels out of all of its buildings. So Ithaca is a place to watch in New York and across the country. Berkeley, Menlo Park, both in California, those are places to watch. So I think that some really interesting changes and challenges are coming.
And that, listeners, is our climate story of the week. Today, with New York Times international climate reporter Somini Sengupta, who's also the lead writer for the New York Times Climate Forward newsletter. Her newsletter edition earlier this week titled, "Is Gas Green?" because of the declaration by the European Parliament that gas and nuclear will be considered green for the purposes of loans and subsidies, at least while the Russian military rages in Ukraine. Thanks a lot, Somini. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.